So tonight we're going to be talking about the second mindfulness training. And we're going through a period in Snowflower Sangha where we're visiting each of the mindfulness trainings to renew our familiarity with them, shine new light on their teachings, and also as a way of considering for those of us who have not yet made a commitment to using these trainings as the sort of the guiding light, the ethical beacons in our day-to-day lives, to give us a chance to really consider them deeply. And then on June 24th, on Tuesday, Sherry will be leading a transmission ceremony, and we'll have an opportunity to either renew our commitment to the five mindfulness trainings or make a commitment for the first time. And I like to think of these trainings as a raft to help us get from the shore of delusion and confusion to the other side, to the other shore of enlightenment and peace. And they are tools that were offered to us by the Buddha to observe, study, and practice. To observe, study, and practice. And when the Buddha offered them to his disciples, he did so in a very simple way. They were much shorter, they were much, in my mind, they were a little bit more cryptic. Our teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh, has kind of opened them for us like a flower so that they're a little bit more accessible. And in so doing, they've become really powerful dharma doors, ways of entering into the practice and really delving deeply into what the implications of the Buddha's initial instructions to us, what those implications are in a day-to-day life. So they're a way that we can practice mindfulness in every moment of our daily life, not just during sitting meditation. And our teacher, Thay, tells us that they're a way that we can protect ourselves and our families and our loved ones. So they ensure a safe and happy future. I think that's pretty extraordinary. So tonight we'll be talking about the second of the five mindfulness trainings. And before I delve into that, I'd like to start with a story. And this is a story that has two parts. First, it is a story of my husband and I when we were very young, before we were married, and very much in love, kind of gaga over each other. And Dave had finished his residency program, and before he started to go out and practice medicine, he took a year off, an entire year to just explore and to see what was out there. And one of the things that he did was he became a doctor on a cruise ship for an entire month. And during that year that he was not working, other than doing these short stints, I was teaching acting at the Academy High School of Performing and Visual Arts in Chicago. And I was in over my head and exhausted all of the time. So when he went to be a doctor on a cruise ship for a month, we timed it over spring break, and I took a week and went and joined him on the cruise ship. And we did a number of things, you know, Nassau and Freeport. And then one day, the cruise ship went to an out island, a little privately leased island in the Bahamas that didn't have much development on it, but the cruise ship kind of pulled near, and then there was this ferry boat that would run people back and forth to this island, which was mostly just a beach. And So this ferry boat was named Baharama Mama. And I remember that because my husband was, not my husband at the time, my boyfriend, took my picture while I was standing on the beach. And I was young. And he carried that picture then for years, and he called me his Baharama Mama. I think that picture finally disintegrated after 12 years. The second part of the story, then, is recently, Dave and I had the opportunity to retire early and to go sailing. And we were on our boat, and we had crossed the Gulf Stream, and we were sailing around Great Stirrup Key in the Bahamas, in the Berry Island group. And it was a beautiful, warm, but kind of windless day. So we were just creeping along as we were going. And we had been actually sailing for 3 days straight without stopping on land. We had crossed over from Florida, and the ocean was really flat and calm. And so it's almost like sensory deprivation, that you kind of get in the state of just not really seeing anything but the ocean and the sky, and the water's just kind of doing this, and we're just kind of going along. And I look out and I see a cruise ship. And I say, oh, look, there's a cruise ship. And David says, yeah. And I'm looking, and we always kind of followed Norwegian Caribbean Line, because that was the line that he worked for. And I said, oh, I see NCL. It's a Norwegian Caribbean cruise line ship. He goes, yeah, it is. And we're just sitting there kind of working our way towards it, and all of a sudden, it occurred to me and him at the same moment that that was the same boat on the same island and the same ferry boat, Baharama Mama, running people back and forth to the island and the ship. And 30 years had passed in between. And the experience was much like, I think, when people claim that they have a near-death experience and their whole life falls, you know, in front of their eyes all at once. But it was very much like that, where births and deaths and houses and pets and jobs and a whole cascade of experiences just went boop, 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 boop. And it knocked my breath away. And I looked at the ship and I went, hey, bleh. And my husband went, bleh. The two of us were pointing and could not get the words out that that was the boat and that was the island. And we are both speechless. And that was my first experience of vertical time, of deep time, where everything exists in one moment. So time is a strange thing. And the older I get, the stranger it gets. That things seem like they were yesterday, and they seem like they were so far away. But mostly what we live in is horizontal time, where it's like driving a car. You just kind of go and go and go and go, and time kind of unfolds in a straight line, like aging. Except that as we go, I think it helps me to understand that I'm exchanging my bits of my energy and my experiences for memories. So I'm almost like depositing parts of myself throughout time as I go forward. And the challenge with this horizontal experience of time is that it is beset with the distractions of our industrial growth society. There are a million impositions on our time. We have way too much to do in order to get through the day. And technology puts us on an ever-increasing sped up treadmill that we just get going faster and faster. And it's almost, in a way, it maroons us because of this frantic pace from the rest of ourselves. We're just trying to keep up. And this straight ahead, horizontal, ever-increasing speed experience of time, it actually destroys the quality and the meaning of life. But vertical time is actually something that has been voiced in all kinds of cultures throughout history. The Greeks wrote about it. In Buddhism, we practice vertical time when we stop and we meditate. We rest in the here and now, and there's no before and no after. And we can sit in the company of our ancestors and in the claims of our descendants, because it's all present in this moment. And we can be solid and still, and there's no place to go, and there's nothing to do. Vertical time has left spectacular landmarks throughout human history. Art, literature, learning, rituals, these things endure far longer than any one individual life. And meditation, what's really powerful about it is it has the opportunity to embody both horizontal and vertical time, that it's all present. The Buddha encouraged us to drive all places into one and drive all times into one time. And in doing so, we can nourish ourselves with an experience, a connection with our past and with our future, and with past generations and with future generations. When we drive all moments into one, we expand our capacity for compassion. Because from this point of view, we have much deeper insight, and skillful action and joy naturally emerge from this place. The whole of existence is present in this moment, and we can speak from a place of responsibility for the circumstance of our life in the here and now. This is drinking from a very deep well. And this not only merges place and time, but it merges our experience of ourselves, all those deposits of our energy that we have left as we've gone through time, unite, and we can become whole. And we also have the opportunity to extend our mental reach beyond human history, to understand what it means to truly be made of stardust, to grasp and understand our place in the universe. So vertical time is a Dharma door into interbeing. And it's a way of awakening to the reality of impermanence, because everything is constantly changing. It drives us away from separateness and into deep relationship and responsibility. With an eye to vertical time, it's possible to question the fundamental premises of society, challenge the status quo, and we can see humans not as the pinnacle of creation, and that creation is not here solely to serve our needs. We can see ourselves as part of and not the center of the storyline. We are in the splendor of the whole. We can be free of species narcissism and experience an interdependence with all life forms. So from this place of vertical time, let's take a look at the second mindfulness training. I bet you didn't think I'd get there. Okay. Aware of the suffering caused by exploitation, social injustice, stealing and oppression, I am committed to practicing generosity in my thinking, speaking, and acting. I am determined not to steal and not to possess anything that should belong to others, and I will share my time, energy, and material resources with those who are in need, I will practice looking deeply to see that the happiness and suffering of others are not separate from my own happiness and suffering, that true happiness is not possible without understanding and compassion, and that running after wealth, fame, power, and sensual pleasures can bring much suffering and despair. I am aware that happiness depends on my mental attitude and not on external conditions, and that I can live happily in the present moment simply by remembering that I already have more than enough conditions to be happy. I am committed to practicing right livelihood so that I can help reduce the suffering of living beings on Earth and reverse the process of global warming. This is the second mindfulness training on true happiness. So it says, I will share my time, energy, and material resources with those who are in real need. And the question is, who is in real need? The Bodhisattva's calling to ease suffering can actually take on a three-dimensional quality when we drive all times and place into one. Yes, we can care for the child who is before us and in need, but we should also stop stealing the forest resource that the great-grandchild needs to create oxygen and to store carbon. Yes, we can stay safe by removing criminals from the streets, but we should work to bring an end to the generations of social injustice that persist by making economic opportunity accessible to all. Yes, we eat organic food, but we should halt the exploitive practices of seed engineering that destroy native plant genetics and impoverish the planet of species diversity. And yes, we can eat vegetarian, but we should end animal oppression by returning lands cleared for grazing into complex life-supporting ecosystems. So the notions of stealing, social injustice, exploitation, and oppression take on new forms when we consider our responsibilities to future generations and to our ancestors. Thinking about vertical time also reveals the suffering of our collective consciousness. Society is wounded, and each of us is imprinted with those wounds. They are carried in us, and none of us are separate from them. So let's do a little exercise sitting here for just a moment. I'd like you to close your eyes and put your hand on your heart. And just put your attention on your breath as you breathe in gently and breathe out. And ask yourself, where in your body does child abuse live? Take a cleansing breath. Where in your body does the death of coral reefs live? Take a cleansing breath. Where in your body does the Holocaust live? Take a cleansing breath. Where in your body does Gandhi live? Take a cleansing breath. And finally, where in your body does the hummingbird live? You can open your eyes. So our lives and our bodies are imprinted with society's collective consciousness. And in vertical time, the episodes of our lives and our store consciousness are infinitely vertical. All things exist in this moment. And all things we can find in our bodies, and they provide important information accessed from the place of connection and interbeing. These episodes and experiences and connections aid us in gaining wisdom and knowledge. So, what does all of this mean? The second mindfulness training instructs us, I will practice looking deeply to see that the happiness and suffering of others are not separate from my own happiness and suffering. Well, with vertical time, it's really quite a simple thing to see our interbeing, how we all share the same roots of happiness, how we all carry each other's sufferings. And it's no wonder that something like child abuse exists on average for 7 generations, because we carry the pain that's in each other. The training instructs us that running after wealth, fame, power, and sensual pleasures can bring much suffering and despair. Well, yes, pursuit of these pleasures takes place in horizontal time with a vision of separate selves and isolation. But in vertical time, the evidence of this statement is laid bare in society by looking at the lasting repercussions of slavery, unfair international trade agreements, the dysfunction of our political leaders. And we can see the evidence in our own lives, in the broken marriages and addictions that our loved ones hold. The training states we can live happily in the present moment simply by remembering we already have more than enough conditions to be happy. Well, the lens of vertical time reveals the superficial nature of today's industrial growth society. The roots of true human joy do not lie in materialism or profit. They are found in lives of ease, connection, meaning, love, spiritual growth, personal safety, and freedom. These are timeless qualities that all of us can touch in any moment. And gratitude for life is key to happiness. The natural outcome of an awareness of our true home in this space-time continuum is not stealing anything that should belong to others, because we are aware of their existence. They are alive in us. We practice generosity in our thinking, speaking, and acting, because we understand that we are cut of the same cloth. We practice right livelihood so that we can help reduce the suffering of living beings on Earth and reverse the process of global warming. Those choices naturally grow from the awareness of vertical time. The Buddha knew this, the existence of vertical time, or at least the experience of it on the moment of his enlightenment. In the story of how it transpired, he was haunted by Mara when he sat under the tree and said, I will not rise until I achieve enlightenment. And Mara, much like the devil, taunted the Buddha in many ways. And the last taunt was the accusation that the Buddha could never accomplish enlightenment. Who did he think he was? He didn't have the capacity. And in what is now a very meaningful gesture, the Buddha took his hand and he touched the earth. And the earth was his witness to his many lives and his bold aspiration for enlightenment and his transformation, his capacity for transformation. The earth was his witness. And with that, Mara gave up and fled. I'd like to think that in some small way, that the experience aboard our ship, when young Heather met old Heather in that moment, and all of my many lives suddenly illuminated before my eyes, I'd like to think that the earth was my witness to my capacity for transformation. Because I am neither the same person that I was at age 22, nor a different person. So vertical time reveals the reality of interbeing and impermanence. And from this place, the teachings of the five mindfulness trainings are logical and obvious. They fall naturally from our awareness. So let the reality of vertical time soften our hearts and expand our capacity for love so that we can cultivate true happiness in ourselves and in others. Thank you.